Hi, my name is Andy. For those of you who were here this morning, you'll have heard me talk about kind of flourishing from an individual point of view, and you'd heard me say a bit of my background. Because I know that we have slightly different congregations, I'm going to repeat a little bit about who I am, just for those of you who are only here for the evening service. As some of you will be aware, my name's Andy, and I originally come from Bethesda. My dad's side of the family are local gypsy travellers, and my mum are proper Cymro Cymraeg, from Carnarvon and from Rachib. And I came to faith in this very church about 7 years ago, and I got baptised here. And it was just an incredible time, and this is really a bit of a home for me. I've also been to a number of different churches in London, a free church, and now I'm in an Anglican church. And it's really kind that Peter still sees me as a bit of a Baptist missionary down in London. But I have to admit, considering I've been to a free church and an Anglican, I think it would be better to describe me as a kind of a Baptist free church Anglican missionary down in London than just a Baptist. I've been in London for about 6 years, and I started off there working for Christian Aid, doing campaigns, international campaigning, and then I moved over to work for Tear Fund. And one of the things I've done since being down in London is I've tried my best to cycle to work as much as I can. When I was living down in Lewisham, I used to cycle up the old Kent Road, if any of you know that, through Elephant and Castle to get up to Waterloo, to work at Christian Aid's office, and now I'm living in Clapham Junction, and I cycle about 10 miles down the South Circular route all the way down through Richmond and Twickenham to get to the leafy Teddington. And there's one thing you know, if any of you have lived in London, that cycling is a blummin' dangerous thing in London. There has been many a night where I've come back home and I am shaking like a leaf because I've either been hit by a bus, a lorry, or I've had somebody step out in front of me. And it, just some days, there was actually a time last week where this woman was just walking along with her headphones in and just completely just stood out in front of me. And I was like, ah! It was just like my heart rate just shot up through the roof. And it wasn't even a kind of an ah of anger. It was an ah of like, watch out. What are you doing? Be careful. You're going to hurt yourself. And the thing you notice in London, and you notice a lot in life, is there are people who do just step out, and you're like, ah, stop, you're going to hurt yourself. And it makes me think that's a lot what we're like as a church. We're an incredibly fragile thing. The church is not a powerful thing. The church, at its best, is not a thing that has really strong structures. Being on a bike is not a powerful thing. You haven't got this great big vehicle around you. But you do go along this road, and in that journey of life, you come across people who just step into your path, and you want to go, ah, watch yourself. You're going to hurt yourself. This life, we have the privilege as a church of coming across people in our paths who we just want to go, watch yourself, be careful, look where you're going. And there's something about that I want to talk about today. I've had the privilege, since working in Tear Fund and working on campaigns to do with poverty internationally, tackling issues of corruption, issues of food poverty in developing countries. But I've always had an interest in UK poverty, inequality and deprivation as well. And through my internal lobbying and advocacy, I was granted the opportunity to go and work for our UK Impact Team, which is a team that looks at community transformation in the UK. And we kind of encapsulate that vision with a kind of a strapline of we want to see thriving individuals and flourishing communities. And this morning I spoke a little bit about the thriving individual side, and I mentioned a bit about Tear Fund's definition of poverty, that poverty is holistic and that it's not just economic or physical, but it's also social, environmental and spiritual, and it's complex. And so many of us will know about some of the issues of poverty internationally when we see absolute poverty or extreme poverty, as we'll call it. But as much as we've made a lot of progress in the Western world, we still have a huge amount of injustice and poverty in this country. We've made huge progress, but we shouldn't be blinkered to the fact that on our doorsteps we have big issues that we still as a society and as a church need to tackle. Just a few examples I want to share with you from kind of a Western perspective. In 2011-12, there was a 135% increase compared to 2002 on the number of people admitted to hospital with alcohol-related issues and problems. That's 1.2 million people were admitted to hospital with alcohol-related issues in 2011/12. 135% increase. Another report that came out recently, the OECD, which is the club of the 20 richest countries in the world, they came out and said that over the past 5 years, roughly about there's been a 20% increase in the administering of antidepressant drugs in the Western world. There's been an increase in the number of people who are using antidepressants. They don't just put it down to oversubscription either. They put it down to genuine problems that are going on. Another example, in England and Wales, there has been a fourfold increase in the number of teenagers and children admitted to hospital with obesity-related conditions. Yet at the same time as there being a fourfold increase in the number of children and teenagers admitted to hospital with obesity-related conditions in England and Wales, there has been a 170% rise in the number of people using food banks in the last 12 months. The Trussell Trust, which is a Christian charity that runs a number of those food banks, has seen the largest number of people ever use food banks since they were formed in 2000. They had, in the last 12 months, they had almost 350,000 people using food banks in the UK. That's about a 100,000 jump on the previous year, number of people using them. So when we talk about poverty, it's not just about economic, it's not just about absolute. It is about issues of broken relationships. It's holistic, it's complicated, it's issues of deprivation. This doesn't surprise us in Tear Fund, because we do see poverty through the lens of broken relationships. And we believe that this has come about primarily first because of our broken relationship with God. We moved from a place of wholeness and living in perfect relationship with God and with the creation around us, with ourselves and with others, to a life of ultimately broken relationships. That is our definition of poverty. And even though we can see it in other societies, it is around us here as well. And it's within us as well. We're not just talking about the material and the external, but there's a brokenness inside of ourselves, how we identify ourselves. How do we see ourselves? Who do we know ourselves to be? Our self-worth can be damaged and broken. We believe as Tear Fund, it's the mission of the church to bring about reconciliation and restored relationships. And that's ultimately our definition of flourishing, is restored relationships. And the outworking of this, the church being involved in restored relationships in both relationship with the environment, with our neighbour, with ourselves and with God, we call integral mission. We believe that the church should be involved in an approach that is inherently holistic, because we believe poverty is holistic. So to deal with it, we need to deal with the whole person, the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, the economic and the environmental, without dividing these into separate pockets. This morning I spoke a little bit about that journey that we take as individuals to go from a place of brokenness to a place of flourishing. And I spoke about two paths, one leading to life and one to death. But this evening I want to talk about how we together flourish and how we are called to use what we have in our hands to build authentic communities that serve each other, serve our neighbourhoods, and serve our wider society. How we can start to live out shalom, a biblical principle which we translate as peace, but actually is more better translated as a sense of wholeness, as a sense of authenticity, a sense of bringing together, which is what Jesus wants for us. He wants us to have his peace, his wholeness, which transcends our understanding. And from the passage that Peter kindly read from Romans 12, I want to bring out three points which I think help us to understand that journey as a community that we are called to take. The first point is that we ourselves individually need to be transformed by the renewing of our own minds. The second is that we're called to serve others with the gifts that God has put in our hands. And then finally, that we can understand, there is a way of understanding what a truly flourishing community is and what it's meant to look like. So the first point is being renewed. What is it for us to be transformed? So if we look at that passage, if you have your Bibles with you, if you'll turn to the beginning of Romans 12, I'll just read again verses 1 and 2. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. We need to shed the false thinking of this world. Firstly, you need to know your own identity. You are not an accident. You are wonderfully made. You were made by a good God. You were made to do acts of kindness that only you are able to do. You know, the world may tell you a different story. Actually, most of the time, we ourselves tell ourselves a different story and beat ourselves up. But you have inherent worth. You were created by a loving God, and when you were made, you were fearfully and wonderfully made. You were a masterpiece. Every single one of us is a masterpiece. Now, yes, we do live in a world where every single one of us, as much as we're a masterpiece, is infected with sin, infected with a kind of a disease. If we were that masterpiece, that painting, we're shrouded in a thick layer of dust or dirt. But underneath that dirt, there is a masterpiece. And Jesus came and he died in order to show us that there is a way out. There is a cure for that disease. And he was the perfect model to show what it looks like when you fully understand who you are. You know, those words that God said to Jesus when he came out and when he was baptized, "This is my beloved son who I am well pleased with." He was affirmed right from the first word of his ministry. He came out from his baptism and he knew he was loved by God. He was cherished. And that love that God had for Jesus, he has for every single one of us, despite the fact that we're infected with that disease known as sin. But there is something about transformation which is painful. Now, the video we saw with that butterfly coming out of the chrysalis. Now, the word transformation comes from a word metamorphosis, which is that sense of a complete change. It is a change which is unrecognizable. The caterpillar goes into the chrysalis and comes out a butterfly. But the butterfly has to struggle to get out. And there is something sometimes, I think, in our faith journey which we've been missold. You know what? This is an amazing journey, and it is a wonderful experience, but it is tough. It is tough as well, and we need to fight for it. We need to make those choices ourselves to push through and to accept that transformation. Because if we're willing to fight for it, then the transformation will be complete and we will turn into the people that God always knew that we were capable of being. So I would encourage us all to remember that the first step is be renewed, be transformed, allow yourself to see yourself as God sees you and walk into that journey. You know, it says that God had prepared good deeds for us to walk into. Let's take those steps of walking into them. The second point I want to highlight is that we should take what God's put in our hands and use them. I'll just read through a little bit of Romans 12:3-8. Firstly, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment. For each of you has... For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ, though we are many, we form one body, and each member belongs to the other. We have different gifts according to the grace given to us. But if your gift is prophecy, then prophesy according to your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is to give, then give generously. And if it is to lead, do it diligently. And if it is to show mercy, then do it cheerfully. Our God is a creative, caring, and a generous God. And we ourselves were created to be creative, productive, generous, and to be generous with the gifts that we've been given. I love the words of Martin Luther King on kind of the subject of serving with what we've got. He said these words, "Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject on your verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love." Each one of us has different gifts. Gifts that God has put in our hands through his undeserving kindness, so none of us can boast in any of those gifts. So if your gift is being generous, then be generous. If your gift is hospitality, then be as hospitable as you can. If your gift is to speak out against injustice, then speak out against injustice. If your gift is to be a nurse and to care for those who are sick, then do it with all your heart. You know, if the gift you have is teaching, then teach with everything you've got. If the gift you have is the gift of being good with numbers, then be the best accountant you can be or the best maths teacher you can be. All of these gifts ultimately come from God. And God blesses you with those gifts in order to bless others. You know, it's one of the first things that God really powerfully spoke to Abraham. He said, "I am going to bless you and I'm going to make your family into a great nation, that through you, others will be blessed." It's kind of one of those things that, again, we gets lost in translation sometimes as a church. We as a church are a blessed people. We're a people that are blessed by God. But we are blessed in order to bless others. That is the call. And we're called to be a blessing with whatever gift that God has put in our hands. We don't need to look over our shoulders and see what other people have got and be envious or be sad that that's not the gift we've got, because God knows why he gave you that gift. So one of the questions from tonight is, what gift has God put in your hand? What strength, what character, what particular hobby, what interest do you particularly uniquely have that God has put in you, which is there for your enjoyment, but is there for a blessing for others as well? And my final point from this passage is that actually, as much as I talk this morning about flourishing as an individual, actually it's a bit of a lie, it's a bit of a myth that we can actually flourish as individuals, that actually we can only truly flourish in communities. It's a bit like when you're in school and you say do GCSE chemistry and you got taught about, you know, how the protons and the neutrons and the electrons all work, and you're like, oh yeah, now I understand it, great, I understand that. And then as soon as you move on to A-levels, the first thing they do is scrap all that and they go, well, we only taught you that then because it's all you could understand, but actually this is how it really works. And, you know, there's a kind of a cloud of these negative charges which we kind of like draw as electrons to help you, but actually the real picture is far more complicated and beautiful. And it's a bit like that with us. As much as we talk about individual flourishing, if you were completely isolated from every other human being on the planet, you would never flourish. We can actually only truly flourish in community. And when it says in Romans 12 verse 5, you know, it says that so in Christ, we, though many, form one body. There's something really powerful in that, in the sense that Christ had the fullness of God in him. He was God in the flesh. He had all of the attributes, all of the gifts. But for us to look like Christ, which is the call that we have on our hearts, you know, we are called to imitate Christ and become more like Christ. No individual will ever be able to do that. But as a church, as a body, Jesus knew that as a collection of believers, we could exhibit the fullness of Christ. As a gathering of people, people could see Christ in us together. That by seeing one of us, they would see a part of the picture of God. But to see the fullness of God, they would have to see the church. They would have to see the gathering of believers. I'll just read about what does that community look like when it's living at its best. There's some really powerful words from verses 9 onwards that get mentioned, that our love must be sincere, that we are to be devoted to one another, that we are to honor each other above ourselves. We are to hang out with people of low status in our society, and we're to share with those in need. These are some of the pictures, the attributes of that society, that church which starts to look like Christ. I love the way the Message puts this particular section, verses 9 to 16. I'll just read out what the Message version says. "Love must be from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Run for dear life from evil. Hold on for dear life to good. Be good friends who love deeply. Practice playing second fiddle. Don't burn out. Keep yourselves fueled and aflame. Be alert servants of the Master, cheerfully expectant. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. Help needy Christians. Be inventive in hospitality. Bless your enemies. No cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends when they're happy. Share tears when they're down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. Don't be a great somebody. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. I believe there's a deep hunger inside every one of us for this kind of community, for this kind of authenticity. Even if it's been suppressed deep down and we don't fully understand why there's like a pang, there's a loneliness, there's a pain in there. Just to give an example of why I think society really needs that authentic community, there's been a number of different kind of research reports that have come out on the news recently about the dangers of loneliness. There's a whole campaign about to be launched in London around tackling loneliness. One of the pieces of research that came out found that loneliness can be as damaging to your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That's pretty powerful. Just being lonely is as dangerous to your health as smoking 15 a day. Research has also been shown that being part of friendship networks, being part of community, not only has an impact of reducing the risk of mortality or developing certain types of diseases, but it also helps individuals to recover when they do fall ill. And in England, I'm not too sure what the stats are for Wales, I wish I had them, but in England alone, there are 800,000 people, there's almost a million people who are alone all the time or most of the time. Almost a million people in England who are alone and isolated. The damage that is doing to their health. The hope that we have to offer by offering something different is incredible. And there is something about this being this authentic community. When we talk in Tearfin about community transformation, it starts by being community. And what does that community look like? What does it look like on the inside? I've got a slide of a program I used to love when I was a kid. Hopefully, if it's coming up, it's the first slide there. I'm hoping it's coming up. There we go. Just a quick show of hands. Who's ever seen this program? Okay, there's a fair few. I know there's a lot of students here who most probably never heard of it in their lives. But in the 80s and 90s, I promise you, this was a very popular program. I used to sit with my grandparents and watch this program. Cheers. And do you know what? Since I've come to faith several times, the theme tune to this program has popped into my head. And I'm just going to sing you a couple of verses. Hopefully you'll hear the words through this and not hear my bad singing. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? All those nights when you've got no lights, the check is in the mail. And your little angel hung up the cat by its tail. And your third fiancé didn't show. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. Boom, boom, boom. And they're always glad you came. And it went boom, boom, boom. You want to be where you can see. Our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everyone knows your name. Da, 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 da. And it carries on like that. Oh, thank you. I know I want to be somewhere where people know my name. I know I want to be somewhere where I know that we all share similar troubles, that actually as much as we have superficial differences, we have so much more in common than we ever have different. Somewhere where we can share our troubles, where we can be realistic about the problems we're going through. Somewhere which is an authentic, life-giving community. Beth Kennett, who's a researcher for a charity in the States who works on healthy churches and healthy congregations, says this about authentic communities. The phrase authentic community creates an image of people living and working together, being honest and approachable, kind, compassionate, trustworthy, and open to healthy communication. This description offers a beautiful picture of positive attributes. However, this picture is not easy to paint. In order to be an authentic community, people must be willing to acknowledge reality, to be honest about likes and dislikes, and to confront difficult truths. Authentic community is about relationships with depth, relationships that move beyond the surface of pleasantries, relationships that allow people to know something of others' experiences and passions. Authentic community allows people to be who they are, who God called them to be, and to nurture who God is calling them to become as individuals and as a community of faithful people. Beth Kennett goes on to say that congregations who grasp this opportunity to create authentic communities will not only enhance and strengthen the lives of individuals inside the church, but it will create a lasting impact in the local neighborhood and in the wider society, and not just for today, but for years to come. That's the kind of inside, that's the kind of the what authentic community looks like, the inside. But what does it look like for the outside? And a question I posed earlier is a question for us corporately as much as it is for individually. What has God put in our hands to use? And I wanted to just share a couple of stories of two ways that I've seen that played out, what has been put in our hand to use and to bless others. The first one is me, myself, and a pound I was given in a church. I don't know if you've ever had this. It kind of, my heart sank when it happened in our small group. If you've ever had those schemes, you know, where somebody gives you £10 and says, multiply as much as you can with it, or gives you a challenge and you've got to do it. Well, this woman who was on our last week in our home group gave everybody a pound and said, I want you to go out and multiply this, do what you can with it. So I had a pound in my hand, and I had a faithful church who were willing to back me up. So I thought, what can I do with this? My first attempt, which was pretty lame, was to literally put this pound on eBay and try and sell it for as much money as possible. A friend came back to me and said, no, that's not good enough. You have to try harder than that. Well, I thought, well, what am I particularly good at? Well, I'm a campaigner. I'm a blagger. I've got the gift of the gab from my dad, so I thought I'd try and create a little fundraising project out of it. And who would I raise the money for? Who would I bless with this? Well, most of my family are gypsy travellers, and since being in London, I've made some contacts with the London Gypsy Traveller Unit. So I thought to myself, well, what have I got in my hand? I've got a pound. What have I got? I like exercise. I like doing challenges with a bit random. You know, I've jumped out of a plane. I've done bungee jumps. So what could I do which is a bit strange? And where I live, what have I got available to me? So I thought of an idea to push this pound coin, not this one particularly, but a pound coin, over Chelsea Bridge. And I called it the £1, one nose, one bridge challenge. And my challenge was to raise as much money as possible by saying, I'm going to push a pound coin over Chelsea Bridge with my nose. And people got behind it, which was amazing. The Collis family here were incredible, and Collis's company match funded anything I was able to raise. And over the period of just 3 weeks, I was able to raise £800 for the London Gypsy Traveller Unit. And Anne's company matched it, so we had £1,500, which we gave to them. But that was only possible because the church as a family also came round me and they helped me. I had a friend who was great at video editing, and he did a little video for me. I had another friend who let me talk in the church about it. And then I had others who, like Anne, were able to do the match funding that her company had and brought it together. And it was a community effort, which meant that £1,800 were raised for the London Gypsy Traveller Unit, something that turned from a pound into something so much more. Something which is a bit more recent and is ongoing, and this is something maybe you could get involved in, is the next example of what is in our hand. Now, this chap here is Reverend Hebden. And he was actually born in Anglesey, across the water, so I don't know if any of you know him. And he studied theology in Bangor University. But he's now a vicar over in St. Mark's Church in Mansfield. Now, why he's posing there and why there's a picture of a food bank is that some of you may be aware of the problem of food poverty in the UK. As I mentioned earlier, that statistic about how there's been such a big increase in the number of people using food banks. In the past year and a half, it's almost 500,000 people who visited food banks. And there's around over 5,000 people have been admitted to hospital in the UK in the last year due to hunger-related issues. So this vicar, a Welsh lad, which is good, decided to use what he had available to him. Something that they do in the Anglican Church a lot is they fast at Lent. That was something that was in his hand. And he was like, I'm going to use that fast in order to raise awareness of this. I'm going to support a campaign called End Hunger Fast and do what I can. So he's decided to fast for 40 days and 40 nights. And all he will drink is water and fruit juice. These are his words. He says, I believe this is what the church should be doing. We should be standing with people in the margins. There have been 500,000 visits to food banks in the UK since last Easter, and 5,500 people were admitted to hospital in the UK for malnutrition. Goes on to report in the Daily Mirror, where I took this article, that throughout the fast, the vicar will be focusing on the people that he has met in his local food bank. Most days, people come into St. Peter's, our sister church, for food and clothing. Our congregation is better off, but even many of them tell me privately they are really struggling. As he speaks, a team of volunteer homeless people are in the church grounds picking up litter and hypodermic needles. This is what he said about while he'd be doing the fast. When I'm fasting, I will think of a lady made homeless on Christmas Eve by sanctions. And I will think of a single mother I met at Mansfield Woodhouse Food Bank and the story her father told me. Throughout the fast, I will not describe myself as hungry. Hunger is when you haven't got any food. I won't be hungry. I am doing this in solidarity with people who actually are hungry. He's taking what is in his hand, the experiences of the Anglican Communion with Lent. He's taking the fact that his church have a local food bank. He's combining them together with his church community to raise awareness of this, to stand shoulder to shoulder with people in poverty. You can put the slide down now. Thank you. As Tear Fund, we believe that poverty is ultimately about broken relationships. Broken relationships within ourselves, with our neighbour, within our wider society, and even with the God's creation itself, the environment. And it's broken relationships which ultimately leads to injustice. When we don't know our neighbour, when we don't know their names, when we don't really care and we kind of conveniently close the door when situations are too difficult outside, when we don't consider them a friend, when we don't consider them a brother or sister, then really why would we care if they suffer? But when we start to see each other, when we start to see each other for who we really are, when we let those barriers drop, when we become real with each other, when we become vulnerable with each other, when we start to know each other's names, when we start to realize that we all share the same problems, really, the problems of loneliness, lack of identity, you know, kind of issues of self-esteem. When we start to know each other, then miracles can happen. We can start to become the authentic communities that we were always called to be. And those authentic communities will ripple out into the wider society. When we start to serve each other, when we feed each other, when we speak out against injustice for one another, when we start to associate with people that nobody else will hang out with, as well as use the gifts of God that we've been given sincerely to serve others in our wider community, when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and real, to cry with each other, to laugh with each other, to forgive each other, to show gentleness towards each other, and as we look at each other eye to eye and we say in our hearts, I love you just as you are, then our light will shine in the darkness and the darkness will not overcome it. My prayer for us is that we will use what God has put in our hands, that we will bless each other, that we will make ourselves known inside of the church and make ourselves known outside of the church. That we will reach out a hand of friendship to each other, and that we will restore those relationships. Amen.